All right, imagine this. You're about to receive an inheritance from a trust.
Seems pretty straightforward, right?
You'd think so, but then all of a sudden,
oh.
These legal proceedings pop up that could seriously impact how much you inherit.
Wow.
And the crazy part is, you never even knew about these proceedings.
That doesn't sound right at all.
No, it doesn't, does it?
It really raises questions about fairness in legal proceedings, doesn't it? Especially when it comes to notifying those whose rights are directly affected.
You hit the nail on the head. We're talking about the absolute necessity of legal notice and that all-important concept of due process.
And getting that notice right is a big deal. It can be a tricky balance, making sure legal processes run smoothly while also protecting everyone's fundamental rights.
And that's exactly what we're diving deep into today.
Oh, this is going to be good.
We're talking about a case, a landmark Supreme Court decision that completely changed how we think about due process when it comes to legal notification.
I'm all ears.
Mullane v. Central Hanover Bank and Trust Co.
A 1950 decision that's still shaping legal practice today.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so to set the stage, we've got the Central Hanover Bank and Trust Company.
Okay.
And they created a common trust fund. This was a pretty big deal at the time. We're talking $3 million in assets, and get this, spread across 113 different trusts.
113.
That's right. Now, the bank, they wanted to settle their account, standard procedure.
Right, of course.
But the way they went about notifying the beneficiaries sparked a huge legal battle.
I can see why. What did they do?
Well, they decided to just use a small local newspaper to notify the beneficiaries.
Just a newspaper announcement.
Yeah.
Even if they knew the beneficiaries' names and addresses.
You got it.
So they opted for a tiny newspaper announcement instead of something more direct. That seems a bit strange.
It does.
Yeah.
Especially considering what's at stake for these beneficiaries. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking about their inheritance.
That's right. It raises a huge question. Can a general notice, especially one that doesn't even list the names, actually satisfy the constitutional requirement of due process? Right. And we can't forget about the 14th Amendment. It guarantees that no state can deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. That's a cornerstone of our legal system.
And this case really puts it to the test.
Big time.
Now, a special guardian enters the scene. His name was Mullane.
Okay.
He was appointed by the court to represent those beneficiaries, and he basically said, hold on, this isn't right. Relying on a newspaper announcement, particularly one that's so vague, simply isn't enough to protect these beneficiaries' property rights.
It makes sense. I can't imagine the frustration of possibly losing out on an inheritance just because you missed a tiny notice buried in a local paper.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, the Supreme Court heard this case, and it turned into a landmark decision. They sided with Mullane.
I see where this is going.
It essentially said, to satisfy due process, the method of notice has to be something that's actually likely to reach the people it's meant for.
They didn't hold back.
They didn't mince words at all. So they had some pretty strong words about using a newspaper to notify beneficiaries, especially when their names and addresses were known.
What did they say? Well, the court was very clear. For those beneficiaries whose contact information was readily available, they said relying solely on a newspaper publication just isn't enough.
That makes sense. Did they have any thoughts on what would be a more appropriate way to get in touch with those folks?
Oh, yeah, they definitely did. They emphasized that even back then, there were much more reliable ways to reach people, like, you know, just sending them a letter in the mail.
Direct mail, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So in 1950, a simple letter was the gold standard for letting someone know about important legal stuff.
Exactly.
That's fascinating. You know, when you think about it, this case set a precedent that extends way beyond just trust administration. It really highlights that the method used to provide legal notice has to be something that is likely to reach those who need to know.
Right. And I love how Justice Jackson, who wrote the majority opinion, put it. He used this phrase, one desirous of actually informing the absentee. Such a powerful way to emphasize the intention behind giving notice.
Yeah, it's not just a matter of going through the motions, is it? It's like you're putting yourself in the shoes of the person who's supposed to be getting this information.
Yeah.
And asking yourself, okay, is this going to grab their attention? Will they actually see this and understand what it means?
That's it, exactly. And this was a big change from, you know, how things were done before.
Right.
The court really raised bar. They made it clear that the responsibility falls on those who are giving notice to ensure that it's truly effective.
So a turning point, huh? They drew a line in the sand and said, we need better, more reliable ways to give legal notice.
Definitely. They threw out those old, vague announcements and pushed for a higher standard.
This is all really fascinating, but I'm curious, were there any judges who didn't see eye to eye on this?
Oh, you mean dissenting opinions?
Yeah, exactly. Were there any judges who disagreed with this whole thing?
Absolutely. We can't talk about Millayan without diving into Justice Burton's dissent. He offered a totally different perspective, and it's important to consider his reasoning, too. He basically argued that when those beneficiaries decided to join the trust, they were agreeing to whatever procedures the trust had in place.
Including, I guess, how they gave out notices.
Right, exactly. It's like signing up for a club you agree to play by their rules.
Okay, so he was saying that those beneficiaries knew the rules of the game and shouldn't be surprised when things play out according to those rules.
That's one way to put it. He was a big believer in states' rights, too. You know, he thought that each state should have the power to set up its own procedures for handling these legal matters.
So a bit of a clash between states' rights and individual rights.
Right. That's an ongoing debate, isn't it? How much should the federal government step in when it comes to what individual states are doing?
Yeah. I mean, where do you draw the line? It's a question that pops up all the time in these legal battles.
All the time.
So Justice Burton basically thought New York's laws on trust administration and notice were good enough.
That's right. He didn't think federal standards should always overrule decisions at the state level, especially when those state procedures weren't, you know, blatantly violating individual rights.
So even though the dissent brought up some valid points, the majority of the Supreme Court still felt strongly about setting a federal standard for due process in cases like this.
Yeah. They wanted to make sure there was a minimum level of protection for individual rights across all the states.
Makes sense. So they ultimately sided with Millayan.
Uh-huh.
And they established this much stricter standard for legal notice.
That's right.
But I'm thinking, how do you actually measure that standard in different situations? I mean, there's no way it could be a one-size-fits-all kind of thing, right?
Exactly. That's where the Millayan test enters the picture.
The Millayan test. Okay, break it down for me.
It's a super important tool for lawyers, a way to figure out if legal notice is good enough in all kinds of legal proceedings.
Sounds complicated.
It's not too bad, really. It boils down to two main questions. Number one, is the method they're using to give notice actually likely to reach the people it's intended for? You know, is it reasonably calculated to inform them?
Okay, makes sense. What's the second question?
The second one is, would a reasonable person, someone who genuinely wants to inform these people, actually use this method?
So it's not just going through the motions. It's about being thoughtful and choosing a method that will actually get the message to the right folks the way someone would if they were really trying to let someone know something important.
We nailed it.
Wow. So this isn't just about trust funds, right? This has implications for all sorts of legal cases.
Well, yeah, tons of them.
Where individual rights could be affected.
Uh-huh. We're talking class action lawsuits, foreclosures, even adoptions. It sets a standard for ensuring that these legal processes are fair and transparent. After all, these things have a huge impact on people's lives.
So the ripple effects from this one case about a trust fund are still being felt across the legal world today. It's amazing how a single case can have such a lasting impact.
Yeah.
Can you give me a real-world example of how this Millayan test actually plays out?
Sure. Let's say we've got a homeowner facing foreclosure, and the only notice they receive is, like, a tiny little legal announcement buried in the classified section of some newspaper they never even read. Well, under the Millayan test, that wouldn't cut it. The courts have generally said that when it comes to foreclosures, especially if they know the homeowner's address, you got to be more direct.
Okay.
You got to do something like send a certified letter or even have someone hand deliver the notice, you know, to make sure the homeowner is absolutely in the loop.
That makes perfect sense. Losing your home is huge, right?
Huge.
You deserve a clear, direct heads up before something that drastic happens.
Absolutely.
And it shouldn't be hidden away in some random part of a newspaper.
Yeah.
What about those class action lawsuits, you know, where you have a ton of people involved?
Right.
How does this Millayan test apply in those cases?
Those are tricky, right? You're dealing with a massive group of folks scattered all over the place.
Right.
But even then, courts have held strong to the Millayan standard. They've said that just posting a notice on a website, for example, usually isn't enough to truly inform everyone, especially if you know their email addresses or where they live.
So it sounds like when it comes to giving legal notice, it's not about finding the cheapest or easiest way out.
Yep.
It's about going the extra mile to make sure people actually get the message.
That's it.
Even if it takes more time or costs more money.
Right. It's about fairness and due process.
So Millayan isn't just some legal technicality.
Not at all.
It's this fundamental principle that our legal system is built upon,
uh-huh.
ensuring that everyone has a fair chance, even in complicated legal battles.
That's the heart of it.
Well, we've covered a ton of ground. We've gone from this 1950 Supreme Court decision to the whole world of digital communication in the 21st century.
It's quite the journey.
And it's clear that Mullane v. Central Hanover Bank and Trust Co. is way more than just a case in a law book. It's an idea that's still shaping how we think about due process and ensure fairness in our legal system, a system that's always evolving.
Definitely. It shows how strong legal principles can be, how they adapt and guide us through these uncharted waters.
But here's the thing. This case was decided back in 1950.
A long time ago.
The world has changed so much since then, right?
Why, absolutely.
Especially with all the new technology. I mean, think about it. Email, text messaging, social media. The way we communicate is totally different now.
Totally.
So how do these new ways of communicating affect how we think about legal notice?
Right.
And that reasonably calculated standard that Mullane put in place.
It's like we're in a whole new ball game now.
Yeah, it feels like we're in uncharted waters, right?
Totally.
With all these new ways to communicate, how do we figure out what's good enough for legal notice in this digital world?
Yeah, it's a tough one.
I mean, is an email that might be buried in someone's overflowing inbox really reasonably calculated to inform them about something as serious as a legal case?
That's the million-dollar question. Courts are really struggling with this right now.
I bet. Can things like email or online notifications really meet that Mullane test?
Yeah, can they? There isn't a clear answer yet.
It's complicated, right? I see both sides. On the one hand, electronic stuff is fast and efficient, and it doesn't cost much.
Right.
And you can reach so many more people than with regular mail.
Yeah, that's true.
But then again, can we really rely on it?
Yeah, what if it goes to spam?
Exactly. Or what about security problems?
That's another issue.
And let's face it, we all get so many notifications these days.
Oh, I know.
It's easy for a legal notice to just get lost in the mix.
Totally. It's not like getting a certified letter in the mail, is it?
Nope, not at all.
Courts are trying to figure out how to balance things, you know? They want to take advantage of how easy digital communication is, but they also have to make sure it's fair, that it actually gives people due process.
You got to make sure people are really getting the message.
Yeah.
Not just that it was sent, but that they actually received it and understand it.
Exactly.
It's a tough job figuring out what counts as proper notice when technology is changing so fast.
It is. It really is.
Are there any court cases or new trends that shed light on how they're approaching this?
There have been a few cases dealing with electronic notice and that Mullane test. Like, in some cases, courts have said it's okay to use electronic notice if the parties have already agreed to get communications online, like in an online contract.
Yeah.
And some have upheld email notifications if they're combined with other methods, like posting a notice on a main website or sending a text message as a backup. The key is showing that whatever you're using is actually likely to reach the person and give them a real chance to respond.
So it sounds like the legal world is trying to keep up with how quickly technology changes, which isn't easy.
No, it's not.
But it seems like those main principles from Mullane, that notice has to be really designed to inform and use methods that a diligent person would use, are still central in these decisions.
For sure. Mullane provides a solid framework for dealing with the complexity of legal notices in this digital era.
Absolutely.
It reminds us that due process isn't stuck in the past. It has to change along with the world around us.
This has been a fascinating journey, hasn't it?
Yes.
We've gone from the Supreme Court back in 1950 all the way to digital communication in the 21st century.
That's right.
And it's crystal clear that Mullane v. Central Hanover Bank and Trust Co. is way more than just a case in a textbook. It's a vital concept that's shaping how we think about due process and how we ensure fairness in a constantly changing world.
It truly shows how strong fundamental legal principles can be, how they can adapt and guide us even in these new and complex situations.
So for everyone listening, what's the main takeaway?
I think the most important thing is to remember that due process isn't just some legal technicality.
Right.
It's the foundation of a fair and just legal system.
Yeah.
When we're talking about legal notice, we absolutely must make sure that people have a genuine chance to be heard, to understand what's going on that might affect their rights, and to respond accordingly.
That makes sense.
Whether we're using traditional methods like mail or exploring the world of electronic communication, the main ideas from Mullane should guide our choices and how we handle things.
Couldn't agree more. Mullane really drives home the point that even as technology marches on, even as the way we communicate changes, Our commitment to due process can't waver.
It can't.
It's a powerful reminder that true justice requires us to be on guard and to be willing to adapt to the challenges of a changing world.
Well said. Couldn't have put it better myself.
Well, it looks like we've reached the end of our deep dive. It's been a fascinating journey exploring this truly landmark case.
It has. It's a case that's still so relevant for legal professionals today.
Until next time, folks, keep on diving deep.